SBS Radio.
I'm Bertrand Tungandame and you're listening to NITV Radio. Now, time to talk science and technology with NITV Science and Technology editor Ray Johnston. Today, we'll discover how the smell of coral can teach us about the health of a reef. Virtual reality can help with pain and anxiety in patients undergoing short but painful medical procedures. And scientists have been able not only to manufacture diamonds in a laboratory, but they can do this within minutes. And we also talk about the main fire risk for Australia this summer. Ray Johnston is about to unpack these developments for us. Now, welcome to NITV Radio, Ray.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, now, the smell of coral can teach us about the health of a reef. How does that work?
Yeah, you might not normally be thinking about what coral smells like or even how that smell can change during heat stress. But every organism releases a mix of gases that make up their smell. And we're learning that these smells can actually tell us a lot about the health of those organisms. You know, some gases can influence how an organism copes with stress. And once released from the reef, when it comes to coral, these gases can also affect the atmosphere. So a new study, which is the first ever to look at the smell of coral, of healthy and stressed corals, identified by these particular gases. Now, it's important to know that in ecosystems on land, some of the chemicals that make up these gases can help plants. They can help them deal with drought conditions, for example, or heat stress, or even insect attack. But this discovery also adds to evidence that, just like you and I, reefs will rely on multiple ways to communicate to stay healthy. So these gases can allow different species of corals to signal things to each other, or they might be used to attract grazing fish if there's too much algae growing on them. But this study also looked at the number of gases and the diversity of these gases that were released when the corals were under heat stress from ocean warming, and it found that they drop dramatically. So it's really important to understand what all of these gases do to keep our reef healthy, and to understand how we can work with them to, you know, beat some of the impacts of climate change. We're looking at having another mass bleaching event in 2021, unfortunately, and this might be a key tool in helping to help the reefs recover.
Now, let's go into this virtual reality thing, being able to detect pain and anxiety in patients undergoing medical procedures. This sounds a little bit mind-baffling.
It does. Virtual reality has been used for a long time in medicine. Most people aren't aware of this, but it's been used for decades for distractions or even kind of immersive exposure therapies for people with phobias. But this recent study, they've found that virtual reality headsets or medical hypnosis as well, it looked into, can help with pain and anxiety in patients that are undergoing a procedure that's, you know, kind of like stitches or inserting a catheter, things that are uncomfortable and painful but short. And, you know, we could probably grit our teeth and bear it if we really had to, but we prefer to have some help. So they did this study by splitting 104 patients they had into three groups, and they wanted to see if medical hypnosis or virtual reality as an added therapy reduced the need for additional painkillers after the surgery. So they all received their standard pain relief for the surgery. They didn't make them go into it without any pain relief. And then one group was given the VR headset, another one went into hypnosis, and the third just got regular pain relief drugs after the procedure. So the virtual reality glasses, they were worn the whole time by the patient, and it gave them both a visual and a verbal distraction. They watched a cartoon movie with a calming voice, and it had, you know, positive suggestions about being on a lovely beach instead of undergoing surgery at the time. And the medical hypnosis just had the audio. It just had the sounds of saying, you're on a beautiful beach, you're not undergoing surgery. And they found that from 1 minute after starting the procedure, the virtual reality group, it fared way better than the other groups, and it remained far below the threshold for both pain and stress that they'd put into place. They're going to do a whole bunch of other studies to confirm the findings, but they have found that virtual reality and, to a lesser extent, hypnosis can be considered a very promising and safe tool to add on to standard painkiller-based treatment. It works well.
Kind of a placebo thing without any chemicals going into someone's system. So that's, I find it actually very positive development, because with placebo, they inject something in your body, it might be innocuous, but it's still something going in your system, whereas this virtual reality thing, it's in your mind. And
absolutely. Amazing. Taps into the power of our mind. Our minds are incredible.
Yeah. And heals at the same time, which is incredible. And now, one thing for newlyweds or some people going into these rituals of engagement, and especially ladies expecting big rocks on their fingers, this can be actually fake. It can be manufactured in a laboratory in minutes.
Yes, a team of scientists have come together to absolutely defy nature, and they've been able to make diamonds in minutes in a lab at room temperature. Now, to give you some context so that it's easier to understand how incredible this is, to make a diamond, it's usually a process that takes billions of years, 150 kilometers or further into the earth, under huge amounts of pressure and super hot temperatures above 1,000 degrees. But these scientists have been able to make two types of diamonds. They have found the kind that is found on one of those big engagement rings, and another type of diamond called Lonsdaleite, which is found in nature, but only at the site of meteorite impacts, which is very cool. And it's actually 58% harder than regular diamonds. So they're the special ones. Scientists have made Lonsdaleite in the lab before, but only ever at really high temperatures. And now they can make both Lonsdaleite and regular diamond at normal room temperature. They do it by just applying really high pressure to the carbon and kind of using a twisting motion throughout the process. But to give you an idea of just how much pressure is needed, they put together some numbers, and they said that it was the equivalent to 640 African elephants on the tip of a ballet shoe.
Wow. And they can do this within just in a laboratory with some test. I also think this is why they used to always teach us that diamonds are expensive, because they're so hard to manufacture. They take thousands of years to crystallize, and so such a complex process to make these things, which made them actually the most expensive stones, some of the most expensive stones available, the hardest thing to use in the industry, they're not only precious for wedding and engagement rituals, but they're also precious in industry because of their special characteristics. And this can be replicated in a laboratory within minutes. What
Absolutely.
Does it mean? Well, I just wonder what it's going to mean for the market of these stones.
Yeah, well, I mean, the market of diamonds is an interesting one anyway. It's arguably a market that only exists because of advertising and because we've been told for so many years that these diamonds are special, whereas, you know, in actual fact, apparently, there's just huge hordes of them sitting there waiting to be released into the market. So it'll be interesting.
It's going to be like the cheap Chinese tourist toys. Sorry.
I think it's cool.
No, it's cool. It demystifies a lot of things, but at the same time, I feel for those who paid thousands of dollars for something that can be made in a few minutes.
Anyway, that's why I've never wanted a diamond.
Well, some of us did pay big rocks for thousands of dollars just to get that yes that we needed. But yeah, should have waited.
You definitely should have waited.
And now, the main fire risk, we are in fire season. Now, the main fire risk for Australia this summer will be grass fires in the east and bush fires in the west. But we've seen some of it already starting in Sydney last weekend. What's being said in, you are in the know, in the scientific world, what's the outlook for the bushfire season this 2020-2021?
Absolutely, yeah. The Australian seasonal bushfire outlook, it was released on Friday. It's released every 3 months as we head into a new season. And as you've said, grass fires in the east and bushfires in the west are predicted. It's what we can expect to see. So Australia's climate is now under the influence of La Nina as opposed to El Nino. So the landscape and the weather conditions are going to be really different to the previous 2 years. We're going to see a lot more wetter climates as well, but that doesn't mean that we're out of the risk area for fires at all. You know, weather conditions for the year to date and the summer climate signals, they mean that large parts of New South Wales, particularly west of the Great Dividing Range, face above normal fire conditions, as well as grassland areas of the ACT and into the northeastern Victoria. You've also got grass and crop fires being the main concern in these locations for the summer months, because as the growth dries out in the warmer weather, it creates a bigger risk. When you head over to Western Australia, you're seeing an area that's largely missed out on a lot of the rainfall that we've had in 2020. And the conditions over there are very, very dry, with parts of the south and southwest coasts. They're experiencing above normal fire conditions throughout the summer. But despite the expected wetter conditions for the coming months, the fires are going to be a risk. And you know, even though the grass might be green in your area right now, it does not take long for it to dry out once that heat of summer arrives. You know, we've seen temperatures above 40 degrees on the east coast in the last weekend and early this week. And grass fires, the risk there is that they can start really quickly and spread really rapidly, especially when fanned by strong winds, which we're seeing a lot of with La Nina. And they can catch you out and do a lot of damage. So despite the prospect of a wetter summer, we've got a few hot and windy days that can make a big difference to fire risk. And everyone still needs to be very prepared for fire to be hitting this season.
Yeah, let's just cross fingers we don't get to the conditions we experienced at the beginning of the year. It would be horrible conditions, ending the year with a beginning with a natural disaster, pandemic, and then another natural disaster. No, let's just cross fingers that we don't get to this horrible situation. Well, Ray, thank you so much for these very, very entertaining but serious and good stories. Again, you make science sound like the best thing on earth. Yet
it is the best thing on earth.
You make it sound really nice and easy and entertaining as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about science with you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.